Hello and welcome to the Pints and Penalties Scottish Football Podcast. I'm Rory West, and on the podcast this week I'm joined by Cameron Christie.
Hello.
And Harry Shamim.
Hello everyone.
So back up to the full complement. Christie, what were you doing again last week? Was not a bit of DIY, is that why you missed out?
Yes it was, aye.
I'll let you off for that one. I guess we'll just we'll get right stuck into it. We'll start off the pod looking at the Scottish Cup semi-finals that occurred over the weekend. Obviously both at Hampden Park behind closed doors. Starting with the big issue, the change of camera angle. Did that bother either of you?
Initially, yes. I found it a bit disorientating, but I think once it got to the second game, the second half of Hearts against Hibs, you kind of got used to it. But initially, I was like, "What's happening here?" Don't know why they've done it either. It's maybe just because you get the managers and the subs in the picture. I don't know.
I was going to say the exact same thing, Christy, except I kind of grew to like it more almost, I think.
I have a feeling they've done it before. I think it was the Scotland women's game before the World Cup against Jamaica, I think it was. I think they've done it from that angle before. So it's not necessarily new, but it's not something that we're really that used to either.
Hmm. I think I did hear something about it was like for distancing for the sort of punditry and the gantry, because obviously for the Hearts and Hibs game anyway, you had BBC and Premier, so I'm not sure if it was something to do with that, but anyway, that we're just kind of going on a tangent there. So we actually got onto the game. Hearts obviously beat Hibs by 2-1. I think I've been I've said, but in the past that I find that Hearts and Hibs games can be pretty stinking at times, especially sort of when they were both in the top flight. It seemed as though we got sort of fair few 0-0 draws or pretty bleak 1-0 draws, whatever. But I thought for the whole almost 120 minutes, this was a pretty entertaining game. I don't know if either you agree with that or thought it might have been a stinker. What did you think?
No, I thought it was, certainly very competitive as we thought it would be going into it. Me and you, Rory, kind of spoke about it last week. Made for a good game. I think obviously Hearts, at least sort of initially, were playing a lot on the back foot, but were still able to kind of offer something going forward, able to exploit some lack of pace in the Hibs back line, as we'll probably get onto at certain points. That Hibs were quite wasteful early on, but that almost made for a better watch as a neutral.
Yeah, I agree there. I think, Rory, you made a good point there about the games when they tend to be in the same division are usually pretty rubbish, and when it's a kind of level playing field. But I think when there's a, in terms of league position and form and things like that, when there's a clear underdog, it tends to make the game a bit better. And you think back to the quarter final, the year Hibs obviously went on to win the cup when they were in the second tier. That was a real entertaining game at least. This game is definitely better than the majority of derbies that we tend to see.
Do you reckon there was anything to do with the crowd for that? Because you find that, especially those two sets of supporters, that it can get pretty cagey. Looking back a few derbies ago when Ollie Lees scored for Hearts at Easter Road, and that 1-0 win, and it was just getting pretty sort of like a lot of pressure on the Hibs players and a bit toxic at times. Do you reckon the lack of fans actually have helped the game itself?
Yeah, I think it's easier for players to kind of get themselves, it's obviously not really an apt phrase to use, but block out the noise and just focus on their own game. I think we've seen that in a lot of games that have been played throughout this lockdown period in other leagues, obviously, where they've actually been some of the better derbies we've witnessed for some time. So yeah, I think that definitely does play into it a little bit.
Yeah, you look at like that Merseyside derby a few weeks ago. That like they're notoriously stinkers of derbies, but that was pretty decent.
But you see that, I mean, the one that they had just after the kind of restart at Liverpool Everton was stinking, so it kind of goes in a way, either way, because I mean, even like Celtic and Rangers felt quite flat, but this was a bit different. I don't know, there's maybe the occasion and what's at stake, really, you know, placing in for what is last season's cup final. But yeah, I think it just depends on the game. I think if this had been stinking, we might have said, do you think the lack of fans was an impact? So I think it just goes both ways. Just depends on if the game's all right and if folk players show up, which I think they did, and put a real effort into the game.
Yeah, I thought watching kind of like the first half an hour, I was almost convinced that Hibs would win the game. They just seemed to have much more quality going forward than Hearts. But almost like, because I was really impressed with Martin Boyle in that first sort of 30 minutes. But it was almost like you hit the 30 minute mark and he decided, okay, that's me for today. That's all my sort of quality out the window. And from then on, he was just so wasteful. And I wouldn't say that's massively the reason why Hibs didn't win the game, but throughout the whole game, Hibs created so many chances and were, in general, really wasteful. And I think that'll really annoy Jack Ross, annoy the Hibs supporters. I think this is a what if for Hibs. They easily could have came out of this game with a win, but yeah, it wasn't to be with some poor defensive displays, in my opinion.
Well, I think, I mean, if you look at it, the Hearts comfortably could have been 2-0 down. There's two massive, massive chances for McGuinness and Nisbet. Obviously, the Nisbet one, it's an unbelievable save from Craig Gordon. But I actually can't believe the BBC haven't included the McGuinness chance in their little package here, because I'm pretty sure Gordon's dove the wrong way. And if not for a block, that's a goal. So, yeah, I think that from a psychological and also, I would guess, a physical standpoint, you know, Hibs put a lot into the start of the game. And then Hearts were able to kind of rope-a-dope their way back in and put themselves in front.
Yeah, Hearts definitely set up, I think, initially to sort of weather a bit of a storm from Hibs. I think that they knew that they were going to come out and be more attacking. They knew a bit better on how to deal with it. And yeah, I mean, an exception, like I say, they probably gave them two really good chances. And obviously, like Harry, you've just said, I mean, what a phenomenal save that is from Craig Gordon. And it's another one where, obviously, we're still on this is last season's semi-final. If this was last season's goalkeeper, there's absolutely no chance that Hibs don't go 1-0 up there. And I think Craig Gordon was given the star player in the team of the week, and there's a little wonder why. He played a real big part in this one.
I think what I thought for the second half anyway is that the game totally changed once Nielsen brought Naismith and Haring on for Walker and Roberts. I thought Naismith just added a wee bit more guile, you could say, in the sort of the final third for Hearts, just a wee bit more intelligent than Jamie Walker, you'd say. I thought Haring also sort of just shored things up a wee bit in the middle of the park. That extra body there in there probably helped. But for the Hearts, the first Hearts goal, so when I watched this for the first time, I was almost as you do, laughing at Porteous, thinking that's his fault. But on watching it back, I think this is so bad from Paul Hanlon. He's let Whiten drag him out so far, and then he chases his run, and then once Hanlon reaches the penalty area, he just stops, doesn't actually like continue running and maybe take up a position. He literally just stops on the edge of the box and lets Whiten run into the back post, which he obviously heads it in with after a decent cross from Ollie Lee. But I just was almost astounded that a player of Highland's experience allowed that to happen so easily.
Yeah, the other thing is you've also said Hamlin there, sort of stops you. Guys like Bogic are deeper than him when the crosses come in. It's pretty poor all round. Obviously, Hamlin there, Portis gets caught under the ball. But you've also got Josh Doyle, who doesn't shut down Ollie Lee at all. I think I can see what he's trying to do. He's trying to get McGuinness to come back and shut him down, but I don't ever think McGuinness was getting there. So, you know, if you're Doyle, you could probably go out to the ball and McGuinness can cover you if you get beat, give him a little bit more time there. So it's criminal to allow such space for Lee to put the cross in, but, you know, the cross is pinpoint on the Whiten's head, and it's a real fantastic header for a guy who has basically come back in from what was effectively nothing in the Hearts career to sort of put himself down as almost like a not undroppable, but a guy who you can perhaps rely on to score a couple of goals for you this year.
Yeah, I think to your point, Christy, I noticed more Doig not going out to cover the cross, and I think what he was hoping for, I mean, he needs to communicate to Gogic. I think he was hoping that Gogic could kind of slip into his position and he could move out. That never happened, and then it's left to McGuinness, and he's miles out of position. So, but yeah, I mean, it's a great cross, but it's an easy one to deliver when you've got that much space. I guess to play devil's advocate here, I thought there maybe was a foul or even two in the build up to that goal by Hearts as they win the ball back. What were your thoughts on that?
Yeah, it was quite a weird one because Willie Collins in a really decent position there. He's right in front of the incident and he gives it the old sort of like both arms out wide, like a definitive no to the foul. But yeah, I was a bit, watching that back, I was a bit sort of puzzled as why that was a good decision.
I think the first one might be by Kingsley, and that's the one that I think is more of a foul than the Haring one, which is a little bit of six and a half a dozen. But yeah, I thought there was definitely a case there, but Hibs didn't seem to voice it very much.
No, but Hibs obviously get one back through Christian Doidge. This is I'm going to sort of criticise the Hearts defending too much here. I think this is just a really decent sort of leap and some pretty decent air time for Doidge and a tidy header into the bottom corner. I think there was maybe a few complaints about offside, but I've not really seen a good enough angle to prove whether that was on or off, but a decent header for me nonetheless.
My only worry about what you said there with Hearts defending was that, you know, they'd been warned just a little bit earlier. The ball just wasn't quite on the money for Doidge. It took him a little bit wide, and it's the second one where he's largely free for a header, so you thought you'd maybe learned your lesson from the first one. And to be fair, if you look at it again, if Doidge doesn't score, there's every chance it also could have been a penalty, because there was a clear two-hand push in the back from Peter Haring.
Yeah,
I think it is a really good header, and you can actually see in his movement that he's read the flight of the ball mid-run, kind of checked back and gets up really well. But yeah, I think there is a little bit of criticism to be had. I mean, they aren't exactly touch tight to Doidge, and he clearly gets a bit of a run on Halkett.
And then kind of moving on to extra time, just so we don't spend too much time on this game. Or before we go into extra time, I guess, there is the penalty shout towards the end of the 90 minutes. Looking back, I think the one on Boyle after the original foul was probably not a penalty, but I'm a bit confused as to why the first foul or first sort of challenge isn't a pen, to be honest. I think Hibs probably are a bit aggrieved on that one.
Yeah, Yeah, I think he's been dragged to the ground there, Deutsch. So yeah, I'm in total agreement there. But yeah, I think the Boyle one is just a dive, unfortunately. So
just a bit desperate, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, if there is contact, he's certainly made the most of it. But yeah, I think the Deutsch one, Jack Ross will be furious about.
Mm. Yeah, so we're getting an extra time, and I thought the game kind of went in a similar pattern to the first sort of 30 of the 90 minutes, where again Hibs were largely on top for most of the extra time. They do get a penalty, probably a bit dodgy. I don't think there's an awful lot of contact on Joe Newell, who I actually thought had a pretty decent game for Hibs. I thought most of the good stuff came through Newell. But yeah, I guess the whole sort of justice is done patter is there for Hearts. But
I mean, in the course of the game, he's been pretty unlucky not to score. And you know, that's only a matter of inches away from being an excellent penalty. So yeah, just unlucky, I think, more than anything.
Mm, yeah.
You always, when you go that high, you always run the risk of hitting the woodwork, and obviously it was the post rather than the bar. Whereas the rest of his penalties, he's been going low. So maybe that playing into his mind there. Obviously, Craig Gordon stays very low. But yeah, I mean, it's one of those. If you think about, just didn't quite get the redemption maybe in the penalty shootout, like Jason Cummins got. A couple of years ago against Dundee United, when he made a real arse out of the
actually
tried the Penenka. But it's obviously it's unfortunate, and it shouldn't detract from what's been a really good start to life at Hibs for Kevin Nisbet.
Mm, yeah, I think Jack Ross said after the game it won't affect him, he'll step up again, which I'm sure he will. But not long after Hearts were to get their own penalty, I've seen a few doubts over this decision. At the time, I thought this was a clear penalty. I think it's really clumsy from Paul McGinn. But I don't know if either of you see this on the sort of soft side.
No, I think I'm with you. I do think it's a penalty.
Mm.
I actually do think it is a tad soft, although, you know, there's not too many arguments you can have when you're sort of challenging from the back, and yeah, I mean he definitely makes contact into the back of him, so yeah, it's a tad soft, but yeah, I would say it's just about a penalty.
Liam Boyce steps up, he dispatches the penalty kick with no problem, sending Hearts to the Scottish Cup final. Overall, do you think this was deserved for Hearts, or is it just a sort of a big missed opportunity for Hibs?
Both, kind of. I think this is one where it always was probably going to swing a goal either way. If Hibs had gone through and Hearts had gone out, I don't think we would have said that was that harsh either. So it is definitely a massive, massive missed opportunity for Hibs. There's no doubt about that.
I think that does this take away anything from their start so far, or is this just essentially a one-off game?
It depends. I think it is the biggest game they've got, so
I think they shouldn't look at it that way, because I mean, technically speaking, it's obviously not really a part of this season, and they just have to kind of crack on, hopefully go again and have another cup run. Yeah, it's difficult to say, but I think they've started better than perhaps they themselves would have expected in the league, so they can't be too disappointed.
Mm. So the Hearts were waiting keenly on the game on Sunday to see who would meet them in the Scottish Cup final next month. And that game on the Sunday finished Celtic 2, Aberdeen 0. Going into this game, I can't really remember what we said on the pod last week, Has, about how we thought this game would go. But on the day, I kind of I don't know if it's just this sort of defeatist person in me, but I was expecting a pretty comfortable Celtic victory. And I'm not sure, again, if that plays into sort of Celtic's form against Aberdeen at Hampden. But I thought Aberdeen started the game all right. They definitely started it on the front foot. But when you're playing Celtic, you know that eventually they're gonna get into the game at some point, and it's just about how to sort of manage that period. And what Aberdeen did so well last Sunday and the draw is they managed the game and sort of limited Celtic to very few chances. But it was just the sloppy mistakes that Aberdeen gave away for the Celtic goals, and it was ultimately their undoing, I thought.
Yeah, I think what we said last week was that we actually seemed to kind of intimate that it would be a bit closer, perhaps, than we had been used to seeing between the two sides at Hampden. But for the most part, I think it did turn out to be a slightly atypical meeting of the two sides, because, like you say, I think Aberdeen did a lot of good things on the ball. But for me, they've made similar errors to what they have done historically off the ball. I think there was a lot of occasions where the back three, if you like, their starting position for Celtic attacks was very deep, and it cost.
Yeah, I think for the first goal, while it's an absolutely stunning finish from Ryan Christie, there's a wee moment toward in the edge of the sort of Aberdeen penalty area where McCrory and Kennedy get a little bit mixed up with which man to take. Kennedy doesn't seem to sort of want to move into the sort of the centre of the pitch, where he's probably right to do so. And McCrory's just a wee bit slow in swapping, I think it's Rogic from who his manager really was, and it gives Christie that few yards to take up and strike. But once you gave him that space, it was obvious he was going to shoot. But I mean, there's nothing Aberdeen could have done about the strike. It's just a stunning goal.
Yeah, it's that one there where you're right, McCrory probably should shift the players on better. Kennedy should come into Rogic and McCrory should come into Christie, and it just doesn't happen. And then when you give a player of that quality so much time to shoot, you are asking him the question, can you do it? And he absolutely could. So some people saying, oh, should Joe Lewis do better there? I'm like, oh, no. He's miles away from it. He's absolutely never going to save that. Really good goal.
Yeah, I think if someone's sort of criticising Joe Lewis for that, they're almost looking for someone to blame, because it's just you do kind of have to hold your hands up and say that's a brilliant goal. But I mean, the issue with Aberdeen and sometimes in these games against Celtic at Hampden is once they get going, they've already given them Celtic a head start, and I mean, Celtic obviously get their second shortly after through El Yunusi, and it's a great cross from Rogic, but it's quite slow from Andy Constein. But once Aberdeen got going in the second half, they're already 2-0 down, and it's just so difficult to get back into the game from that point.
Well, in my opinion, the ball from Rogic is great, and perhaps Hoban's not expecting it, but he's got to completely shut off that avenue, and he shouldn't be allowing him to cross like that. I think he's very slow and pretty pedestrian in trying to block it in the first place, so I'd be looking at that as well. And I think he's been really good overall at Aberdeen so far this season, but that was a bit of a disappointment for me.
I said at the time, I think that all three of the back three are to blame for this. Taylor is too standoffish, which I kind of understand, because he'd gone tight to Edward before and then left big gaps in behind him, so I can understand why he's done it, but he's dropped off and let him turn. Hoban's got to shut that, like you say, shut that avenue off, and Andy Constein, even if he sticks in his own net, you've got to try and deal with it somehow. again, just letting it come across you. There's every chance that a certain player's going to put it in. That's another one that the danger signs were there earlier on, where he'd kind of not quite got it, and Ryan Christie put a header past, well past the post. So the signs were there for it, but when a ball comes across the goal, and I know how difficult it is, I've put one in myself doing that, but you do have to try and deal with it.
Mm. There's been a lot of sort of talk online about whether it was the right decision from Derek McInnes to start Sam Cosgrove in a game of such sort of high consequences, given he's not played an awful lot, for about the past sort of 10 months or so, you could even say. Would either of you have went with Cosgrove from the start, or was he in the wrong to start him?
I'd say the wrong, because in general, I don't ever think the games when Aberdeen don't really have much of the ball, doesn't suit, it's never suited Cosgrove, so I don't know why it would here. I think he'd have been much better to come on as a possible impact sub at 65, 70 minutes, similar to what he'd done the week before. I can see why he started him, because obviously he did cause Celtic some issues when he came on, but I think I'd have much rather have someone in a game like this when you're going to have less of the ball, have a bit more of a mobile striker. Maybe his plans were scuppered a bit with Edmondson not playing, but, and I know I'm not a big fan of it, but this was maybe the one where Watkins was probably a better option to go through the middle, and then probably bring McLennan in for the start as one of the wing backs, and have Hedges in right sort of playing alongside him, Watkins like they were earlier on in the season.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think Watkins would have been the one I would have gone for, just for more continuity, really. I think if you're going into what is, as was the case for Hibs, your biggest game of the season so far, you need to have that kind of degree of continuity. And I think me and you said Cosgrove did well when he came on against Celtic last week, but yeah, I still think it's always beneficial to kind of keep your keep the players that are in form going in the team, especially when we haven't had a midweek fixture and Celtic have. That's just my opinion, and yeah, I think you're right, Tristy. He didn't have much impact in that sort of game.
As I kind of mentioned, I thought Aberdeen came into it much better in the second half. I think it was probably pretty clear that Celtic tired, and that was to be expected with the sort of hectic schedule that they're on at the minute with the European games. But while I thought Aberdeen played better, they didn't really create too many clear-cut chances. I think the biggest issue for them was that they barely forced a save out of Scott Bain.
I don't think he made one. To be honest, I think a lot of them went past the post. A couple of the big ones got blocked. The one for Cosgrove when Scott Wright, similar to the goal Hedges ended up scoring last weekend, kind of nips in on that on the centre back out on that right hand channel. But Cosgrove's shot's pretty poor. And then you've got the one for Kennedy that Frimpong gets the block on. But other than that, not really too much that was anywhere near. Anyway, you're threatening me. I mean, he created some chances, but like I said, there was none that were really worthy of scoring, to be honest.
I thought, as I said, Aberdeen were pretty decent in the second half, but is this another missed opportunity at Hampden for Aberdeen, or were Celtic just, did their quality just kind of shine through in the first half?
No, it's a missed opportunity for sure. I know that it is a wonderful strike, as you said. I mean, it's obviously a great cross as well for the second, but yeah, I think there is a lot to be desired from an Aberdeen perspective for both goals. I just think it is disappointing, especially when you compare that with last week. I know Celtic, you know, will of course have analysed that game and improved themselves defensively, but yeah, it's just really disappointing that ultimately we haven't really created a clear-cut chance in that game.
I think the other blow as well, from Aberdeen perspective, was obviously when we see the team come out and saw that Johnny Hayes wasn't in it. I suppose a groin injury that nobody knew about before the game. I think the 3-4-3 working, he is such a big part of that. And yeah, Kennedy came in and generally did okay, started the game off pretty well, and obviously he's probably partially at fault for the first goal. But I think having Hayes in there would have made a real difference. You could have maybe had Kennedy over the other side and gotten Hedges sort of further up the pitch and closer into the striker, and allowed his creativity in there rather than sort of doing defensive duties and coming back as a wing back.
Have you heard how John Hayes got injured? It's quite a funny story, actually.
Was it when he was out and a dog bit his hand? Well, it was a hot dog.
Well, just if we had Neil McCann on commentary to have a sequel, a follow-up to that legendary piece of patter. But now, apparently, it was on the Saturday or the Friday, and he was walking into the sort of the changing room as McInnes was about to announce the team, and he slipped and sort of did his groin. So
I do love a, you know, like a ridiculous sort of injury. I think it's not like Rio Ferdinand hurt his back leaning out for like a trying to reach the TV remote or something.
Yeah, he was out for months. Yeah, it was not like Tevez slipping in the shower and stuff like that.
There's the usual sort of glass bottle. I think Santiago Canizares and there's an English player did the same. And I remember Jamie Langfield missed a game because he spilt coffee on himself on the team bus.
Well, I mean, we're going through the ridiculous here and we might as well stick to that. So we'll shift on to some Premiership action and start at Tannadice, where Dundee United beat Ross County by 2-1. And I think it's fair to say we were pretty critical of Ian Vigers last week for his performance for Ross County against Motherwell. And he's almost topped himself this weekend with the most absurd way to give away a penalty I think I've probably seen this season. It's just it's just hilarious, to be honest. If you've not seen it, check it out. I don't think any words can describe it any better than just watching it for the first time, but it's just hilarious.
Well, I just don't understand how he can lack that much composure. I mean, first and foremost, the entire passage of play is pretty laughable. Dundee United kind of mess up his routine. And then
I have not messed that up. That was deliberate.
You think? I'm not sure, because no, then it gets passed and it's just a bit of an aimless lump into the box. So even if it is, I don't rate it as a set piece. And then, you know, a couple of bits of head tennis and then the ball drops in the box. Nobody's even closing Vigers down and he just sort of swivels and pulls out of his own clearance and then he's basically caught the ball in his arm, and yeah, it's absolutely dreadful, to be honest, from both sides. But yeah, Ian Vigers, I mean, a bad season goes to even worse for him.
So you're saying you didn't rate this free kick routine has?
No, I thought it was, yeah.
But resulted in a goal, so what's not to like?
It did, yeah, but I mean, if you're passing it back and then just lumping it in from a, I mean, I don't think it's an advantageous angle at all, and then it's not even a good ball. I don't rate it at all.
Yeah. Well, United scored, also, so joke's on you.
Yeah, and look, yeah, it resulted in a goal, but Dundee United, I don't think Dundee United had much of a part in that, to be honest.
I rate that style of free kick, but I think it needs to be near the box for it to actually work properly.
Yeah, if you're adjusting the angle, then that's okay. But if you're doing it near the halfway line, like
that to do that free kick seemed a little bit daft from being that far out. But yeah, it's communication is what that penalty ultimately comes down to. Obviously, when you've got the YouTube highlights on and you can tend to hear a little bit more of what's happening, it doesn't seem like either player is taking control of that situation at all. they've both kind of backed out of it, and then that's eventually why it's ended up, he sort of ended up almost holding the ball. But I mean, I know that he's the captain and he's experienced in that, but he's been absolutely murder this season, and surely you need to be looking at taking him out of the team for his good, get some confidence up, get a bit of form in training, and for the team's sake, because he's gifting errors, whether it's penalties, whether it's passing it straight to opposition, whatever it is, that's happening every week at the minute, and it's really, really not good enough.
Yeah, I think by all accounts, United seemed to create a wee bit more in this first half and looked a wee bit better going forward than they have in the past few weeks. The sort of attacking players looked like they managed to combine a wee bit better than they have been. As you were saying earlier, that we went from this sort of this comedy goal to almost a goal of the season contender if Peter Pollock manages to slide his finish him.
And I think, if you contrast that with how Dundee United played last week, it would have been unthinkable, because this is actually a really good move. All credit to Dundee United, because, it's good one-touch/two-touch passing right the way through. Everyone makes the right decision, and quickly, and then Pollock just puts it wide. It's disappointing because, like I say, I think that's right up there if that goes into the bottom corner there. I think Dundee United, I think from that point, Dundee United actually seemed to kind of let County back into the game. But so that'll be a bit of a concern. Still, missing that ruthlessness up front.
I much prefer the Dundee United setup. I mean, it's something that I think, I can't remember if I spoke on here or I spoke to you guys about it off here. It's the setup's much more of what I like to see from them, is that kind of 4-4-2. They've got two strikers. Clearly, their strength is in the strikers, whether that's Shankland with Clark or McNulty. It gets guys like Luke Bolton forward, bringing a bit more solidity in defence with Liam Smith. No Mark Connolly is always a bonus, given how bad he's been at times. But this, I just think that this setup definitely suits Dundee United. The players have got a lot better. They're still quite defensive. They gave up a lot of possession. But it offers them more, I think, when they go forward. It gets quicker, more creative players on the pitch and in the right areas.
Yeah, I think for Ross County, though, while there was some decent attack and moves from United and they did all right going forward, I still think that the goals that County concede are pretty cheap. Obviously, the first one, we've talked about that enough and how sort of ridiculous that is, but there's still, I just still think the second goal is a pretty soft goal to give away. It's just so easy. So many United players just standing on their own, unmarked in the penalty area. I just think these cheap goals, they conceded plenty last week. It's going to be a massive concern now for Kettlewell.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's two fairly nothing free kicks that Dundee United have scored from. Okay, yeah, one's the penalty and one's a fluky deflection, but they've not really defended them very well in the first place. Reynolds wins the first header and gets lucky with the bounce back to him and the deflection. But, he shouldn't be winning that basically unopposed against two guys near him. It's such a disappointing, like I say, such a cheap and disappointing goal to lose. And when you are in, they gave away a number of chances and poor goals last week. We thought they'd tighten up at the start of the season, but I think it's just they hadn't conceded goals. Every team is still creating the chances, and it just so happens now that they're taking them.
Well, the other thing is, like I say, I think Ross County, if you watch some more extended highlights, seem to be sort of in the ascendancy. And again, going back to what we said last week, Rory, they're always going to be in trouble if they're conceding soft goals like this, regardless of how well they play outside of that. And yeah, the free kick, initially they don't deal with it well. But also, if you look at Donaldson, I don't really understand what he's doing at that kind of back post area or front post, depending on what the angle is. Yeah, he just kind of sinks back into his box, and then he ends up playing Clark onside, which is just completely unnecessary. So, yeah, it's a bit of an odd one. I'm not really sure what he was thinking there. But, yeah, so soft. And then from that point onwards, you know, low on confidence. Their main goal scorers aren't really firing on all cylinders, so they just gave themselves too much to do.
Yeah, I think the improvement on that on last week is what you can say is that they didn't allow the roof to cave in like they did last week, but and they obviously got the consolation goal, and I think that's another concern for Dundee United is that Ross County managed to pass away through the United team almost pretty easily. But other than that, you wouldn't say that there was an awful lot that you could say that County merited a point or anything out of the game.
No, I quite liked a lot of what Ross County were doing. Good going forward was coming through Charlie Larkin, who is the guy that came in and from Birmingham City. And was it, I think it was him where I forgot his name, Stuart Kettle, says, oh yeah, he's not guaranteed to play.
Yeah.
Based on that performance, you're like, why not? It's the first time I've really taken any notice of him. Like, well, if he's you know, sort of going for the same position as Ian Vigas, why are you not playing him? Because he's clearly going to offer you a lot more. But yeah, a lot of stuff comes from through him. But like you said, but Dundee United with a team who defend so deeply to get beat in behind is a little bit of a worry.
Mm. So that's, well, it's two wins now in 12 in the league for County. It's on the slide a wee bit, real poor run of form.
Were they not bold in the first two games of the season,
though? Yeah, so there we go.
Yeah.
just, it's not looking great at the minute for County, but Dundee United up to fifth in the table, but that's the sort of, still a lot of sort of movers in that area of the league. But we'll move on now to Livingston 0, Motherwell 2. It's 4 minutes out of 5 now in the league for Motherwell. It seems as though their forced COVID break has actually done them a wee bit of good. I'm not sure if it's allowed Stephen Robinson more time on the training ground to sort of organise his team a wee bit more, but they're looking back to their old selves a wee bit more every game now, I'd say.
Yeah, a couple of players they've got back as well. McGinley coming out left back, being able to re-sign Devante Cole, and there seems to be a bit more confidence coming through the forward players. We've seen them in the last couple of weeks all sort of start to put the ball in the net and different sort of chances as well. But yeah, they seem to have improved a bit, settled a little bit more. Even with Mark O'Hara at centre half, bizarrely enough, they've really looked troubled. But I think that maybe says more about the opposition than the Motherwell defence itself.
Mm.
What I quite like about Motherwell in this game is if you watch the highlights, every single time they pick up the ball, a slack ball from Livingston, they're very quick. Very decisive. Most of what they do is, you know, one or two touches, then release the ball. And it's always going forwards. There's not a lot of sideways passing, which, you know, we see from the likes of St Johnstone at times, where it's just a little bit over elaborate. They didn't make things overly complicated here. Get the ball forward in transition and made Livingston pay.
Yeah, I mean, you just need to look at the first goal, and Cole picks it up and he manages to slip in Lang. By the time Lang gets his shot away, there's, I think, five Motherwell players in the box that are all managing to sort of break pretty quickly and in numbers. I was really impressed by the front three of Cole, Lang and Watt. I thought their rotations, as well as their pace and sort of movement, were causing the Livy defence all sorts of problems. And as you said, Christy, it's good for Motherwell that they managed to get plenty of players on the score sheet, not sort of being relying on one guy getting their goals. Everyone's sharing them around, and especially when that's being shared within your front three, it's that's only a good thing.
Because that's what Stephen Robinson was really critical about earlier on in the season, and we noticed that every game earlier on, he was substituting his entire front three during the game, was trying to find one that worked, trying to give players opportunities, and nobody was really taking them. But now we've seen obviously Lang taking his. Cole looked promising even though he hit an absolutely ridiculously wayward shot when he managed to get in behind. And somehow Tony Watts all of a sudden decided he's going to start scoring again. I'd like to see it happen a little bit more before we get carried away or anything. We know what's happened previously, so yeah, I think he needs to have a strong run of consistent form rather than a streak of, you know, scoring a couple of goals and then, you know, not scoring at the end of the season, which was what happened before.
Yeah, let's see, like a run of five games with consecutive goals or something like that. That's probably what you're after for Tony Watt. But I mean, Livy are having a wee bit of a goalkeeping crisis at the moment, aren't they? That's obviously Stroik came in last week with McCrory not able to play against Rangers, but another sort of error from your goalkeeper leading directly to a goal. I don't think this one's as awful as some of the McCrory ones against Killy, but it's still an error. And when your goalies are sort of making those unforced errors, it just doesn't sort of help your case at all.
Oh, you've either got the goalkeeper, I'll have a go at the wall instead for the Tony Watt goal. I think it's Kieran Brown. He just pulls out and leaves a gap. It's a nothing free kick that should hit the wall. And I think that's partly of why he's Stujic sort of failed to deal with it, because he just doesn't expect that the wall should hold and the wall should stop that from coming through to him. So I'd definitely more criticism towards the players in the wall than the goalkeeper himself.
I actually think he's not done particularly well for the first goal as well, because I just don't really like the position he's taken up there. Either you could sort of commit and you fly out at Lang, or you stay back a little bit more and make him sort of force him to go for a more of a curling shot towards the far post. Yeah, that's just my opinion. But yeah, I think to be fair, the area he's parried that into is just so dangerous, and yeah, you're not going to get away with that, unfortunately.
Again, struggling at home, Livingston. I think it's fair to say they were dispatched fairly comfortably here. And it's just not the Livingston that we've sort of come to know. They've made their home ground such a fortress almost since they came up to the top flight, and they're just really struggling on their own patch this season so far.
What you saw a lot of in this game was just lumping it forward. It was really unimaginative, very one-dimensional, and then, you know, eventually they get Lawson and Forrest on, but by that point the game's really done. They're forced to just take pot shots from sort of the edge of the box. Yeah, there wasn't really any cutting edge.
Yeah, I think that comes with the strikers. J. Emmanuel Thomas was never the answer. It was never going to be good enough, I don't think. He's kind of bounced around a lot, and he's that kind of signing that Livingston make as their sort of their wild card kind of forward. Three of their strikers are already out on loan. A couple of them I've forgotten the name of. There's the guy who came in from Queen's Park, that's now Park Thistle. There's Jack Hamilton, went out on loan to East Fife. And the one I was surprised about was Lukoc, who's now at Raith Rovers, because when he initially came in, I thought he looked really promising. Bullied defenders, looked a good facilitator, looked like he could link up the play. I think he'd managed to get himself a goal as well. I was still baffled when he was allowed to leave for Raith, especially when you're basically replacing him with J. Emmanuel Thomas, who, like I would say, doesn't look up to much at all.
D- decent pot shot from the halfway line, though. That's always got to be appreciated. But
that's always a bad sign when that makes the highlights bad.
Yeah. I mean, we said it last week, I think, Hads, that we wouldn't really be concerned about Livy, but are we still in that sort of that frame of mind, or is there some cause for concern now?
Well, like I say, I mean, I think the tactical approach was just disappointing, if you could really call it tactical, because I just think that if you're setting up that way to play Motherwell, who, yes, they're sort of on the climb now in the league, but where you're just going to lump the ball forward and see what you can pick up from scraps, I just think you're kind of paying them a little bit too much respect, and Livingston haven't done that in the past, and they've always kind of wanted to play their own game on their home patch. I was just really disappointed with the approach. I don't think that they're going to be in trouble come the end of the season, but yeah, I just think that it's a really poor performance, and they need to get back to what they had been showing in recent weeks.
For me, the approach made sense a wee bit, because I could see why you would maybe target long balls up and have Emmanuel Thomas peeling onto Mark O'Hara, obviously not a natural centre-half. But if that is, you know, the sole attacking route of your play, it's really one-dimensional. It's really easy to eventually figure out. And once you get used to it, it's easy to defend. Maybe, you know, you could maybe do that for the first sort of 20 minutes, and then you've got to think about, if it's not working, you've got to think about trying someone else, and didn't really seem to change at all.
Yeah, so we'll move on now to the game that was on the Sunday, from the league anyway. Kilmarnock nil, Rangers 1, and, I mean, without sort of starting any conspiracy or whatever, it's just, I'm finding each week there's almost less and less to talk about with Rangers league games, because they're managing to sort of grind the games out without them being too eventful, really. They get their early-ish goal. I wouldn't say there's any questions about the penalty. I don't know what Ross Millen's doing, putting his hands up in that sort of high in the area. But yeah, I think Rangers were just pretty comfortable, it seemed, throughout, and they just keep on winning with clean sheets as well.
Well, I think it's 11 clean sheets in 13 league games, which is a simply phenomenal record to have. But yeah, I mean, Kilmarnock didn't cause them too many issues. They got their goal and kept plugging away, didn't create too many great chances, but when you've got the chance to put points on the board when Celtic aren't playing, that's all that matters. Put the pressure back on the Celtic to come and catch you, and this is one, it's obviously a ground where Rangers have struggled in the past sort of 3 or 4 years, so to come away with a win and a clean sheet, especially after obviously play on Thursday in the Europa League, you know, you can't have too many complaints with that.
No, exactly, and the rotation of the players, again, you can kind of see when Rangers are coming off the back of a European performance, whether it be tired legs or because of the rotation in playing personnel, they do look a little bit more flat. I think at times they did show some of the kind of patterns and movements that we're used to seeing from the more attacking midfielders, but yeah, I think they're a little bit off in this game. But fortunately for them, Killie again, bit of a one-dimensional performance, just slinging balls into the box and never really got close to scoring.
I think the biggest concern about this game for me is that when I was watching the highlights, I saw something running along the advertisement board about a guy called Billy Kirkwood, and I was like, who the hell is that? And I spent the rest of the highlights package thinking who that was. And
he's the ICW commentator.
He is, yeah that's exactly who he is. So I thought I recognised the name from somewhere.
How much is he had to pay for that?
Well, no, it's for a radio show he's on, it seems.
Okay.
He's not just advertising himself.
I thought he was plugging like a live gig or something. I think, oh, that must cost a fair bit. It's especially for a televised game as well.
Yeah, he's some radio show. But it'd be quite funny if they were advertising ICW around the pitch. That'd be quite a cool sort of nod. Killy getting involved with the old wrestling. But yeah, consecutive defeats now for Killy, as you said, has a wee bit too one dimensional. But I think what'll probably ease Alex Steyer is there is a wee bit more favourable fixtures in the league coming up. You were always probably weren't expecting too much out of games against Hibs and Rangers, even though they're at home. But I wouldn't say they were terrible in this game. I think he'll be kind of glad to get over these two games. I think there's a few Betfred Cup games over the next few weeks as well that they can, well, hopefully for them, get a few results in. But yeah,
it'd be interesting to see what Alex Dyer does with that, because obviously with them having to forfeit games and losing to Dunfermline, there's absolutely no way that they can make the knockout stages. So you maybe go and obviously try and build a load of confidence up by playing your number one team, or do you go and try something a little bit different to see if it works? I know obviously the standard of opposition is significantly different from you know, outside in the Premiership, but it's maybe worth, you know, having a go, giving a couple of players a run out, and not treat these games as free hits or anything, but just try and see if things work. And try and be a little bit less sort of one-dimensional and possibly in games like this.
For Rangers, up next in the Europa League, they've got Benfica, which it'll be the double header against Benfica, That's starting with the away tie. Both sides going into this with a 100% record so far in the group. It'll be a pretty interesting game, you'd think, between these two teams, probably. If this ended in a draw, then both sides are probably looking pretty good or so to get through. But I'm interested.
Benfica are coming into it on the back of a 3-0 defeat last night against Boa Vista.
So that will kind of make it even more exciting, I guess. But just kind of to finish off. Touch on the lower leagues a wee bit. Christy, do you want to say anything about your Cove Rangers boys picking up a pretty big win over Park Thistle?
I mean, obviously people will probably see the goal, but it's one of the worst games of football I think I've ever seen. Not the team's fault, not the players' fault. The conditions were horrendous. The amount of times the ball got stuck in the, you know, held up with the wind. I don't think I've ever seen a game at the kind of professional level outside of games at Gayfield. I don't think I've ever seen anything like it. But yeah, a fantastic win for Cove. I think a draw would have been probably a fair result. Cove didn't offer too much going forward. Neither did Thistle, to be fair. But it keeps up Cove's 100% winning record in the league since they've come into the SPFL. So, long may that continue.
Impressive result at the weekend for Morton, with coming back from 2-0 down to win 3-2 with, I think they were 2-0 down with 7 minutes to play. So, a pretty impressive win for David Hopkins' side.
Some of the defending in that is absolutely terrible, especially from Ayer. I think it's the second goal for Morton. The Ayer defender basically just puts it on a plate for them. I am the right way round. Sorry, it's the perfect knockdown to score from.
Jamesy Mack of this sort of parish, when he can be arsed, actually. He asked us last week, how do Brechin City survive? And the answer seems to be hire Michael Payton as their manager.
Or just get rid of Mark Wilson.
Well, yeah, that might be the most sort of the right answer to that question. But yeah, impressive.
What they should do is they should just consistently sack and hire new managers and hope for a manager bounce every single time that'll get them, you know, some improved results. That's what I think they should do.
Yeah, that sounds pretty. That sounds quite fun to me.
I'm not sure
that
they're going to get too many candidates if they know that. I mean, we could maybe do a game.
weren't we told that it was a cert that Craig Levein was going to be their manager? But that didn't. that didn't come to fruition.
Well, actually, I kind of. Before we finish, of course, next week he will be in the role of. Hopefully, in the sort of role of Jose Mourinho with a Hearts documentary.
I cannot wait for this.
He's supposed to, they've got him sort of sitting, you know, like doing that kind of interviews after it. So I hope he's kind of commenting on stuff after he's been sacked as well.
I'm just getting serious David Brent right vibes here of them like following, like a camera in Craig Levein's car as he's like, I don't know, making his way to the Sports Sound Studios or something like that, and. Bragging how his car's got coffee cup holders or something like that. Yeah. No, that's exactly what we're after.
In his hotel room, he's like, "Got it back. What's going to cost you?"
Aye, well, it's going to cost you my director of football wage until the end of this season. So, that's going to be some watch, and I cannot wait for it. But we'll round things up there. As always, thanks for listening. We'll be back next week, looking back at the Premiership action, and then hopefully in the following week we can be celebrating Scotland getting to Euro 2020. That's in Euro 2021, but yeah, hopefully all comes well with that. But as always, thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.